Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Off the Post. I'm Russ Cohen. We've got Anthony Mangione. And how are you?
Doing good, Russell. How are you?
Real good, real good. Just saw the Tampa Bay Lightning actually get a puck past Carey Price. Not easy to do. And we're going to talk a little playoff hockey, probably towards the end of the show. But at the beginning of the show, we have a couple of great guests. We've got Paul Almeida from Edmonton's TSN 1260. We've been on that show. It's a great show. It's a Saturday show. Paul, how are you?
I'm doing well.
And, yeah, you have to be doing well because, you know, right now we all know the Oilers are getting yet another first-round pick, which doesn't seem to anger me as much as the rest of the world, but I'm a draft guy, so it doesn't, you know, I always just look at it and say, hey, these things happen. But what I do like is the fact that I'm not hearing nonsensical stories or whimsical trade stories like we would in the NFL draft about how, you know, there'll be 15 players offered for Connor McDavid by some team, and the Oilers will have to listen. It's like, I think we're going to be spared all that, right?
Well, I hope so, because if they take anybody other than Connor McDavid, that new rink may be burnt to the ground before it ever sees a hockey game. So I don't think that they would even consider trading that pick, no matter what was offered at this point.
Paul, I got to ask you with regards to if they do, when they do take McDavid, in terms of what they're looking at long term with so many of their young forwards on the Oilers roster. You know, you have obviously a bunch of centers, several centers obviously that you're taking a look at right now, and some other forwards. If there's a player that you think that potentially could be moved, that you would move off that roster in order to make space for McDavid, who would it be?
Well, I think they need a center anyway. I don't think it's a matter of making space for McDavid. Nuge is pretty much established as a top two center in the NHL. The problem for the Oilers was that second line center spot that they, you know, really didn't address all last summer. And then what ended up happening is they go into the season with Draisaitl as the number two center, and he was not prepared for that at all. And near the end, they brought in Derek Roy, who had some very good chemistry with Nail Yakupov and really turned Nail Yakupov's season around. That and, of course, getting rid of Dallas Eakins helped Nail Yakupov quite a bit. And, you know, now adding McDavid to the mix, you go into next season with a depth chart of Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, McDavid, Anton Lander, who came on at the end of the year and was very good, and Boyd Gordon. And I think the plan may be to send Draisaitl to the American Hockey League or maybe try him out at the left wing spot.
Yeah, I could see trying him out on the left wing spot. I kind of remember him playing some wing. And the interesting thing about the NHL draft is if you play a little wing and a little center or even – a lot of wing and a little center, all of a sudden they call you a center. And so I think, you know, in the early part of the development for Draisaitl, that might be a thing that helps him. But I like the fact that Nail Yakupov's back in the game. I thought Dallas Eakins just killed him. I mean, I spoke to Nail Yakupov in the locker room through an interpreter, somebody we know, and he was so unhappy at points when Eakins was there. And it just, you know, Edmonton was coming through only twice a year, and I saw the same mixed-up team all game. Didn't matter if it was practice. Didn't matter if it was a game. They just didn't seem to know what they were doing, and they just seemed to not get the best out of their guys, where Ralph Kruger, before him, got run out of town, and yet he had much better offensive numbers with those guys. Paul, I'm going to ask you to answer that. Before you do, though, I'm going to ask you to hold it, and we're going to invite in Alan now, who I guess he was having some tea, and he finally
probably
called in. Just
nap.
Kidding.
Yeah, he's probably taking a nap.
In Canada, 9 o'clock is 9:03. Just so you know, it's the kind of metric.
Okay. Well, welcome to the show, Alan Mitchell. Thanks a lot. And
has Almeida said anything yet? Because he's wrong. Whatever he said.
Nice.
Yeah, actually, we'll let you answer on this one. But my basic thought was, you know, it's good that Dallas Eakins is out because Nail Yakupov has finally come back alive, and And I think that Aikens just was killing him, and it just now you have Derek Roy there. Now you're going to see some points out of Neil Yakupov. Do you agree or disagree?
I think that the fresh air for Yakupov was a good thing. I worry a little bit because I'm not sure. Greg McTavish said Derek Roy was coming back, or they wanted to bring him back with a new GM. Now you wonder. Yakupov twice now under Roy, and then Sean Horkoff has played pretty well with a veteran center. And then when Leon Draisaitl and others were paired with him under Dallas Eakins, it wasn't quite as successful. And I think it's really dangerous. Yakupov looked good, but I think this coming year is going to be really important for him. And I hope they do get him a veteran center, and hopefully it's Roy.
Gentlemen, what do you think are the? I guess we have to take a looking back at Dallas Eakins right now. He has been mentioned. There's been mention here in Philadelphia about the fact that he could be one of the potential coaching candidates for the Flyers. If you had to pick out strengths and weaknesses of Aikens' tenure, what would you guys both say? We'll start with Alan first and then Paul.
I think Aikens really did do a really good job in turning this team into a better possession team. And I'm not smart enough to know what he gave up to do that, but the puck was headed in a good direction with Dallas Eakins. The coverage was terrible, but a lot of that has to do with the inexperience of the team, and they didn't get a goal, a save, for a lot of the first part of the season when the season was kind of in doubt. I'd like to see him, if he does go to Philadelphia, I think he will have learned a lot of lessons, but I'd like to see him with a more veteran defensive group. It's really hard, I think, to coach in the National Hockey League with young defensemen because they just develop on their own timeline. Aikens did well in possession. I think his power play was not good. I do think that most of the young players either stagnated or didn't develop to the point where they maybe should have, and those things impacted him in a big way. I wouldn't be terribly surprised if he got another job coaching, but Philadelphia seems to me, and this quickly seems to me, to maybe not ideal. I suspect they'll probably aim higher. That's my belief anyway.
Paul?
For me, I was never a Dallas Eakins fan since the very beginning. I did not like the tone that he set right off the bat, and I think that threw off some of the young players on the team. And really, I think going from Ralph Kruger to Dallas Eakins and him being there for that year and a half or so, we really can't say that many or any of those young players really progressed under Dallas Eakins. And I really think that's a lot of time developmentally that has gone by the wayside. And bringing in a Todd Nelson after, who related better to these players in terms of trying to get things out of them and maybe better as a teacher, I think a lot of those guys, including Yakupov especially, really recovered in that second half, and now we look at them as players again. Dallas Eakins, if he does get an NHL coaching job somewhere else, I hope he really learned a lot from his time in Edmonton and maybe changes the way that he deals with players, maybe changes the way that he communicates with players. And I have no doubt that he's a good coach. I have no doubt that he's well prepared. But I don't know if the system he was using, the way he was handling players, was made for the team that he had in front of him.
Fair enough. Okay, now this is going to be a two-part question, guys. I know this is going to be a little difficult, but, you know, just bear with me. I'm kidding. So the two things that I would worry about still with the Oilers, when you sign Justin Schultz, are we really, and I wasn't thrilled with the signing because I knew he didn't really play defense. It doesn't seem like he still really plays defense. It doesn't really seem like his offense is good enough. So my first part of that question is he really going to stick? Is he really worth it? And then my second part is, has Stu McGregor come under any kind of fire? Because when you go back and start analyzing some of these drafts like I do, after the first round, the Oilers have been pretty dreadful on a lot of years. So we'll start with Alan on that. What do you think about those two things?
Bob Green was hired, I don't know, January, something like that, and he is, I guess, going to oversee the scouts, so he's sort of a level above Bob's Stu McGregor. So they've taken some major hits in that area. Bob Nicholson was on Toronto radio in the wintertime sometime, mentioning what you had just said about the draft pick issues. I think what is impacting the team more now than the 2011 plus drafts, so the terrible drafts they had in 2007 and the draft picks they didn't have in 08 because of the Dustin Penner offer sheet, and then 09 was a very poor draft. And in regard to, what was your other question? I can't remember now.
The other question was Justin Schultz. Is he developed?
Oh, right, yeah. Yeah, Justin Schultz. See, my issue with Schultz is that, and I don't want to sound too harsh here, but I wonder if he can play NHL defense. And the reason is the things that you associate with a puck-moving defender, things like being able to make a pass tape-to-tape on the way out of the zone, he's not good at it. I've watched him a lot. I've watched him for pretty much every game he's played in the NHL, and that's a skill a puck-moving defenseman has to have. And Schultz will clank it into the skates or send it to the opposition or turn it over in that neutral zone, which is so important because everybody's heading the wrong direction. He said at the exit interview he had a lot of work to do, and he does. And he's the problem with Schultz in Edmonton is he's already making a lot of money. And that's a lot of pressure. I think there's a chance, I don't know, but I think there's a chance they might walk that contract.
Paul?
For me, the thing with Schultz is it didn't help him when McTavish came out and said that he was a Norris Trophy, that he had Norris Trophy potential. Right away, that put a big target on his back. And then the contract that they gave him was exorbitant for what he had done in the NHL to that point. With Schultz, the problem with Schultz is they're playing him so much. I mean, they play him close to 20 to 23 minutes a game every night. And, you know, the habits that he's picking up are not being corrected because he's got to go out there again. And that's a problem of not having NHL-caliber defensemen to play some of those minutes, that you're having to basically do development akin to drinking water out of a fire hose. And Justin Schultz does not have, as Alan says, the ability to offset his defensive liabilities with his offensive talent. He just doesn't. As Alan mentioned, his puck movement is not crisp. Offensively on the power play, he's not a guy that has a great shot from the point that's going to scare anybody. He moves the puck nicely. He jumps into the play nicely. But you have those moments in the Oilers' end where defensively the coverage for him is just so bad. And it was really interesting to see that Oscar Klefbom, when he joined the team, was the calming influence for Justin Schultz. And Oscar Klefbom's only played 80 NHL games by the end of the year. As for the drafting and Stu McGregor, I mean, Alan knows the Oilers drafts as good as anybody and would be able to critique every single one of those drafts. There are some players coming through now, like Marinchin and Lander, who can maybe take up space on the club now, but there's no question that players may have been lost because the Oilers did not have NHL talent to play ahead of some of these kids, and they were thrown into the fire. And when they're thrown into the fire before they have any developmental time, some of them are not going to swim. They're going to sink. And I wonder how much of that has to do with some of those draft picks not panning out.
Torelli's background and scouting and everything, you're anticipating there's going to be some changes in that respect with regards to how the Oilers are going to go about developing a lot of their players.
Oh, I think so. And I think that pro scouting in Edmonton especially is an area of grave concern. Some of the signings that they've made, some of the money that they've given guys like Nika Nikitin, very questionable. And you wonder what these guys saw in these guys to sign them in the first place. And so I think that's one area of scouting that is, I think, really underlined that needs some upgrades as soon as possible. With the amateur scouting, as Alan mentioned, Bob Green overlooking the whole thing. Be interesting to see, again, what strategy they have in terms of how they draft and what emphasis they put on drafting. You've just gone from Tambellini to two drafts under McTavish to now a totally different maybe scenario as to what the emphasis is going to be at the draft. So the scouts have kind of been given quite a difference of direction over the last even 4 years.
That's a tough one. It is. I mean, it's. I do love the way you guys will use the word dire and everything else, because like here in the States, there's almost nothing that seems to be dire for hockey, or at least in the off season. And you guys are like in like full blown off season mode, and you're worried about what's going to happen with this team next year. And I think you guys know that, you know, in the States, people don't look at the Edmonton Oilers in a very good light because of all the first round picks and lack of development and just lack of progress. So I guess my question to Alan is, how many years? What do you think? Do you think it's 2 years? Do you think it's 3 years until we start seeing an semblance of a team? And I'm not even saying a playoff team. I'm just saying, like, you know, a close to a 500 team.
Well, the great thing about Chiarelli is that you know, he did make quick progress in Boston. In a lot of ways,
he did.
Boston or the Oilers now have more, like, they have outstanding talent. Hall's been in the league 5 years, Eberle, Nuge, mm-hmm. 4 years. Obviously, you know, one hopes that Connor McDavid is chosen and he makes the team. You got a lot of young talent, but a lot of it is forward talent. And as mm-hmm. Paul mentioned, the defense and the goaltending, we know what the problems are as fans. And if we know them, that means that Peter Chiarelli does and Craig McTavish does. But the bets that MacT made last year in goal and on defense. Paul mentioned Nikitin. Ben Scrivens didn't work out. Victor Foss didn't work out. Mark Fain was good, but he plays limited minutes. He's a kind of a shutdown second pairing guy. And those things that have been a problem or are a problem now have been a problem for several years, and the Oilers have thrown money at it. They've attempted to make it better. They have drafted some defensemen like Klefbom and Marinchin. Nurse is on the way. He's going to be a good one. But drafting and developing defensemen take time. I would say that if Peter Chiarelli goes into the summer and just does two things, and that's find a legitimate number one goaltender, be he a free agent or via trade, and then some kind of upgrade as far as a defenseman who can play major minutes. And by that I mean like replacing Justin Schultz with a guy who can, you know, play offense, defense, like a Brent Seabrook. I'm not saying they're going to get him, but if you brought into a calming defenseman, a veteran defenseman into this lineup, and a quality goaltender, even those two things, and they're big, but there's only two of them, I think you could see this team win 35 games.
Okay, that's fair. And my follow-up with you is, will Lawrence Brousseau ever get a chance? I had a chance to spend a little time with him at an NHLPA event over the summer, and he seems to be developing, but on a slow pace. Is he going to even get a look?
Well, Laurent Brossard came up and had that spectacular game at the end of the season. I think mm-hmm. for the Oilers, they need certainty in goal. That is the number one thing. They cannot roll the dice again with a young goaltender, hoping that he turns out to be a good goaltender. The best thing for Brossard would be to have him as your goaltender in the farm team, playing 50 to 60 games, getting a lot of experience, but having here in Edmonton a goalie, maybe an Antti Niemi, maybe a Michael Neuwirth as a backup, maybe not even bring back Scrivens if they can do something with him. The problem with Scrivens, he's got one more year in his contract, so they may have to keep him as a backup. But I think the big thing for Edmonton going into next year with that goaltending spot is it cannot be a question where you're going, I hope this turns out. It has to be something where you know the guy's been a legitimate number one goaltender in the NHL before and have a good backup that can maybe spot in for him if he has a couple of times during the season where maybe he falters a little bit. I don't think they could roll the dice anymore with defensemen. I don't think they could roll the dice anymore with goaltending. It's been far too long, and it's been really a boat anchor for this hockey team. The problem hasn't been the young kids like Hall and Nuge and Eberle. I mean, they've been developing mm-hmm. fine. The problem is they have no support. There's no support there for them. There's no veteran presence on the hockey team that is high-end, like a Jaromir Jagr that could say to these guys, follow me. This is how you prepare. This is how you become a top player in the NHL. And then there's no calming area on defense that allows these kids to make a mistake. And then there's no safety net in the goal. That's been the biggest problem with the Oilers is the kids are fine, but they're treading water. and they're doing the best they can without a safety net to help them.
Guys, here's a question. In terms of with Chiarelli coming in, the Oilers certainly showed some progress under under Todd Nelson. They seem to respond to him. But we do know that when a new general manager comes in, they sometimes want to bring in their own guy, their own coach. In this case, what direction do you see the Oilers taking with regards to their coaching situation this summer?
I think that the goal is to aim high. There are rumors that Mike Babcock won't return to Detroit. If he's available, I bet they make a call. There's a nice group of players here, so I don't know that Mike Babcock would be interested, but it behooves them to make the call. Todd McLellan as well. I like Todd Nelson. I thought he did a really good job, and I would be, if this was a different year in the rebuild, I think Todd Nelson might be perfect. The problem is that as you said earlier, this team has to turn north. I think the fan base, has been overly patient, ridiculously patient. And with Chiarelli coming on board, there's a sense that things are going to be better, and that winning the lottery implies that as well. So I think they have to get the best coach they possibly can. And if it's Todd Nelson, that's fine too. And as Paul said, add a goalie and defenseman, bring in McDavid and go for it. But I think they'll try to get a veteran coach, and I think that's wise.
Yeah, I think a veteran coach, again, it's the same thing as I mentioned with the defense and goaltending. They cannot take a chance on a young coach and hope that it turns out well. They've done that too much here. They need a coach that's experienced, that knows how to handle young players, is a teacher, is a guy that can come in and really, really set a base for this hockey team. I think the plan all along has been to make the playoffs when they move into the new arena. Well, there's 1 year left in the old arena, so they have to get their act together next year, make a big jump, and then the following year has to be a playoff year. I don't think they're a playoff team next year, but unless all the pieces fall into place, which I doubt, but the following year they better be making the playoffs or I think there's going to be trouble. And one name I think we all should keep in mind is Claude Julien. He's still with the Bruins. We don't know what's going to happen with Claude Julien. He's got a history with Chiarelli. But if I had to pick somebody as the front runner right now, I would say it's Todd McLellan.
Okay. I mean, although McLellan gets named here in Philly too, and, it's funny, there'll be a few teams fighting over the same coaching pool, right? I mean, that's what it looks like, because it doesn't look like, unless maybe one new guy will come in, and it's always possible, but it seems like every team's going to wait on Babcock, and even Babcock doesn't know what he's going to do. And so it could be a long summer for a lot of these fan bases just sort of waiting for Mike Babcock to make a decision, right?
Well, I think Babcock will – the tumblers will fall after he makes his decision, and you'll probably get him deciding in Detroit. I think he said something like 10 days, something along those lines. And I think once that happens, there's – it's funny because there's an impressive pool, but it'll dry up very quickly, right? Like if Babcock goes to Philadelphia, say, and then McLellan goes to, say, Toronto, for instance, then all of a sudden you're talking about, say Boston retains Julien, and the possibilities dry up in a hurry. So I think that there may be a team that says, look, you know what, we can't wait anymore for Babcock. If it were to go over a prolonged period of time, you might see McLellan be the first one hired, even though a team probably had interest in Babcock, because McLellan is a hell of a coach too, right? I mean, he's done a fabulous job in San Jose, so he deserves an opportunity on his own, and I think he'd be an outstanding coach for Philadelphia or for Edmonton.
Yeah, and I think some team is going to strike first with McLellan, because there's going to be teams waiting for Babcock, and some team's going to say, listen, we can either be in the mix for Babcock, or we can have the certainty of having Todd McLellan right now if he agrees to come here and we can agree on a deal. And that may be the case, and there may be a team that says, we'll put a call into Babcock. If he doesn't sound like he's 100%, excited and interested about choosing our team, we're going to go right to McCollum before somebody else does. And I think that would be a smart move by an organization if they think that Babcock won't come to them, to be the first one in line with McCollum and say, here's a contract.
I know another thing that's also been mentioned is Matt O'Connor, the goaltender from Boston University,
yep.
in this circumstance. The Oilers have been mentioned as possibilities. What are your views on O'Connor?
I'd like to see O'Connor signed. I think he's an option for AHL. He and Brassois would probably fight it out. The idea of having those two in the AHL and then a Niemi type in front of Scrivens if they decide to keep him, or another goaltender like Neuwirth if they decide not to keep Scrivens, that's the kind of thing that an intelligent veteran general manager like Chiarelli might do, where he takes an area of weakness and he, you know, overhauls it in a hurry, gets rid of some of the young RFA goalies who aren't going anywhere. And if you come into the fall with a depth chart of Niemi and Neuwirth and O'Connor and Brassois in the minor leagues, you've overhauled it, but you've also strengthened it. So if somebody gets hurt, maybe O'Connor does play, but the idea is you've really built yourself a much stronger depth chart year over year.
Well, if you had a choice, Alan, would you – okay, Paul, let me ask you this. Would you rather bring in O'Connor, who's, you know, a definite question mark? College goalies are hard. Sometimes it takes them 2-3. I mean, look at Eric Hartzell. He can't even break in yet with Pittsburgh. Maybe he will, maybe he won't. Would you rather bring in him, or would you rather trade for, let's say, Malcolm Subban? Maybe Peter Chiarelli reaches out and says, hey, Boston, if you're not going to really use Malcolm Subban, you know, we could use him over here.
Sure, but I don't think the Oilers should use that first-round draft pick that they have from the Penguins. That's 15th overall right now. I don't think they should be using that on a goaltender. That's got to be used to get the best defenseman you can get, even if you have to package something with it to get a top defenseman or a good defenseman. Goaltenders are much easier to fill. Like I say, like Alan was talking about, an Antti Niemi or a Neuwirth to play on the team next year, they need that certainty in Edmonton. A guy like O'Connor,
the one thing I can tell you about this draft is there's a lot of incomplete defensemen. Once you start getting to that 15 down below, there's going to be guys that, you know, are going to need work, and you're not going to be...
Oh, yeah, and that's what I say. The Oilers have to move that pick, but it's not going to be for a goaltender. And getting a guy like O'Connor, like Alan was talking about, if we have O'Connor, you have Brassois in the minors, that's fantastic for the Oilers, because they could sell to these young goaltenders that if they signed an Antti Niemi, he's not going to be here 4 or 5 years. They're going to need a guy to step in 2, maybe 3 years, already be pushing an Antti Niemi out. And that's where the opportunity arises in Edmonton. The other thing that arises in Edmonton for a goaltender of that age is you look at the age of the stars on the team. They're all young, and if they can all go together as a group, much like Pittsburgh did with Fleury in goal, and they have Malkin, and they had Stahl and Malkin all together as one group, that's very appealing maybe to a free agent goaltender. But for Edmonton, I can't see them... number one, having a young goaltender here in Edmonton as one of the two goaltenders to start the year. And the second thing I can't see is them using that 15th overall pick to lure a goaltender instead of using it to get a defenseman.
The chat room wonders, what about Dion Phaneuf? Either one of you could take that one.
He's just too much for too long. I like Phaneuf, and I don't think he was handled particularly well. I don't think he's a shutdown defenseman. I think he's more of a offensive zone start defenseman who can use that heavy shot. There's things about Phaneuf's game I like, but, God, that contract is forever, and it's a lot of money. And, I mean, I guess if Toronto cut it in half and kept half of the cap, but why would they do that? I'd pass because of the contract, its length, and the amount.
Yeah, same thing. It's the amount of the contract. He's an Edmonton boy. The pressure of him coming home with that contract, I have a feeling that would not turn out too well.
Okay. We're going to probably go into 2 or 3 minutes of overtime, just letting the fans know that are listening live. Come back and listen. There'll be a little more in the end. Ant, go ahead.
in terms of when we, what the Oilers potentially may be looking at in free agency this summer, is there, I know you guys have mentioned before about looking for a veteran lead, some sort of a veteran leader, possibly up front, possibly on defense, but probably more likely to find it up front. Is there a guy that you're looking at, that you guys are looking at right now, to say that this guy could be a good guiding force for the young forwards for this team?
The forward group is pretty good. I like them a lot. I'd like a guy like Carl Soderberg or Derek Roy, mm-hmm. that kind of a center who could also play the wing. The Oilers traditionally have just enough centermen so that if they have an injury, they got to move a winger over. It would be nice to have it going the other way. I don't know. The problem with the forward group is I don't know how much money you're going to have left over if you hire a free agent goaltender and spend on a significant upgrade on defense. I'm not sure how much is left. If there is enough left, I'd love to get a two-way center type like a Soderberg, and Roy is an interesting guy as well.
Well,
yeah, I think
Derek Pouliot. Go ahead. Sorry, Paul. Go ahead.
That's okay. I was just going to say for defense, I think defense is where the Oilers are going to be looking in the free agent pool and seeing if they can get one guy out of there and maybe one guy that they can sign. You look at defenseman Beauchemin, 35 years old. You look at a Martin, that's 34 years old. An Erhoff is 32. Would they be able to bring one of those guys in? Maybe. Maybe one of those guys looks at the team and says, okay, for a couple of years. I think the danger is if they start signing some guys to 5-6 year contracts, that's where they're going to get themselves into trouble. But if they can lure a guy in, pay him for a couple of years, pay him well, that really gives them some flexibility with that draft pick in terms of looking for another defenseman.
For both of you guys, how for or against were you on the Benoit Pouliot contract? I mean, me covering a decent amount of the Rangers and watching a lot of their games, and he just seemed like he was a pretty good product of the team, and basically he's going to always get that 15 to 20 goals, 35 points, and Edmonton sort of signed him to a bigger deal and moved him up as far as, responsibility, a second line or third line guy. Rangers, he was a fourth line guy. And so, when the cap gets tight, if the Canadian dollar doesn't get better, is he going to end up being a cap killer down the road?
Not for me. I really like Pouliot. He ended up playing a lot of the year on the line with Nugent and Eberle. I like the deal, mm-hmm. from the start. The reason is Pouliot's a big guy. They needed some size up there. But he can also play with skill. He can pass the puck. He can make a pass. He can play on the power play. He's a bigger physical guy. He can aggressively forecheck. Really, he changed a lot of ice for the Oilers last year because he is that big guy up front, and he could play in the top six. I think that he was, I think he's perfectly cast as a second or third line winger and a two-way guy, but they moved him up a little bit, and then they ended up trading David Perron. But I had zero complaints about him. I thought, he took too many dumb penalties, which we kind of knew he would. But beyond that, man, I really liked his game.
Yeah, I thought he played very well, especially at the end of the year. He, Nuge, and Eberle really found some chemistry, and I think that's a line that's going to be together next year, and you're going to see Taylor Hall playing with McDavid on the second line, and the question is who plays on the other wing. Some people think it's Yakupov. Some people think it's got to be somebody more veteran. But the thing with Pouliot, for a lot of people here at Edmonton, wasn't that they signed him, was that they didn't sign a center. That was more of a problem at the time than it was to get a winger. And as soon as they signed Pouliot, you knew that the writing was on the wall for David Perron, because the left wingers on the hockey team were Taylor Hall, David Perron, and Derek and Pouliot. And so at that point, you look at the left wing, you can't have three guys making the money they were on that left wing, and you knew that Perron at some point was going to be the guy that was going to be moving along for sure. I think the guy up front that you look at that as a cap casualty that they should buy out or move right away is Teddy Purcell. That's the guy that, for me, doesn't fit on any of the top two lines.
Ant, any other questions?
Just to Oscar Klefbom on the blue line. Obviously, great size, great size package, 6'3", 210. There's sort of been some whispers out, during a certain period of time where Philadelphia potentially may have had interest in doing a deal with the Oilers and with Klefbom possibly as interest. Where are you seeing him in terms of his development? Do you see him projecting further into the into a top four role as he's going on? I know he's always 21 years old, but do you see him as the as a key component for the Oilers blue line going forward?
Yeah, I would say of the group they have in the NHL now, he's the one guy that they appear to have, you know, hit on in the draft in a significant way. I think he's already playing significant minutes. I think he was over 21 minutes during his 60 games this year. I would suggest that he and Darnell Nurse are probably viewed as being the future in mm-hmm. Edmonton. I think that they need more future to come, but he's a really good young defenseman already. I think he was overwhelmed and overused at the end of the year, but you know, he's a significant asset for them. I do know that.
Oh, he is a 10-year player on that blue line, 10 to 15 years, and I don't think the Oilers would consider trading him anywhere short of getting a Norris-caliber defenseman back in exchange. Oscar Klefbom, you have to say the second half of the year was probably the Oilers' best defenseman, and that in itself is a huge red flag when you have a guy who just came up from the minors and he's your best defenseman. And like I said, he calmed down Justin Schultz's game in the second half of the season quite a bit. And the two of them were playing, as Alan mentioned, over 20 minutes a game, which is ridiculous. And
yeah.
Oscar Klefbom is probably the last guy on this hockey team, I shouldn't say that. McDavid is the last guy you're going to trade. But Oscar Klefbom, I would think, and Darnell Nurse, the two of them, are probably exhibits A and B of players that this team should not be moving under any circumstances.
All right. Well, listen, Alan, Paul, we really appreciate it. People should catch you on Edmonton 1250?
Yep, TSN 1260.
TSN 1260. What time tomorrow?
It's at noon
tomorrow,
Edmonton time. Yeah.
Okay.
At noon tomorrow, and we have Victor Fernandez from the Erie Otters going to be talking to us. I don't know what we'll talk about.
You'll figure it out. I mean, they have a few bars up there. I was in Erie last winter, and you know, maybe you'll talk about the craft beers. It could be that.
Could
love
be that.
It.
Could be that.
Well, listen, guys, thanks so much for coming on. We really appreciate it, and we'll for Off the Post, we're gonna catch everybody next time.
Thank
Take
you,
care, bye. Everybody.
Hey, enjoyed it.